Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. We're going to be joined by Justin Bourne, Real Kipper and Bourne, to talk about Maple Leafs getting the bounce of the century off that stanchion behind the net. Honestly, if you're a goaltender, don't ever leave your net, right? What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, no, absolutely. No reason to head back there. I do love that we all know what the word stanchion means. I feel like a few years ago I didn't. Then we all just decided to learn it.
It was Max Pacioretty taught it to us all.
What it was?
Yeah, Zdeno Chara almost murdering someone with a stanchion. Into the stanchion, and then we're like, okay, that's what a stanchion is that murder device.
It's a basketball thing.
Now if you play like Hockey Clue, it's like in the arena with the stanchion.
From behind.
Yeah, from behind. Ooh. Yeah, it's like, that's the buzzer. Yeah, stanchion, very dangerous is what we know. Dangerous.
JD, you were a goalie. Did you find your way out there?
No, I literally, like when I was a kid, I was totally the coach saying, I'm going to tie you to the net. Like,
I can see that.
Yeah, I love nothing more than, well, first of all, I grew up watching Dominic Hasek, which meant that I was like, that looks really fun, do that. And a lot of times I'd be out like past the hash marks. And I'd fly out of the net trying to like do these like elaborate poke checks. And
you're sending your coach tape from D2 the Mighty Ducks and be like, hey, what if we run this play where I have a real stick?
No, I'm not joking. Like it was a lot sometimes.
The best part though is that the Hasek days really set the bar low for the ability to do it. Like he still did it, but he was actually terrible at it, so
if you're that good, you gotta, as a coach, you gotta give some concessions, right? Like I don't know, I was not that good at anything, but if you are winning multiple Vezinas and in the MVP conversation for like a decade,
you know what though, I'm thinking about how poor John Tortorella would have had to watch Hasek. He would have been like, is it good for the game though?
Because
young JD was making, like, trying to make saves like Dominic Hasek. He was emulating this guy, and old Tortorella was gripping his pearls, being like, is it good for the game? He's got to think about whether this is good for the game.
That's Lindy Ruff has to bench this guy.
That's got
to
be one of the most outrageous takes I've heard in the history of sports.
Oh, my God.
Tortorella saying, is the Zegras pass good for the game? Because kids at practice are going to try that now. It was like some real galaxy brain stuff and some like, his takes are getting so outrageous that I'm like, I actually don't know if he's going to get it. Like, normally media is good for coaches. You stay in the public eye. You end up getting your job again. Mm-hmm. For him, I'm like, I don't know, man. You're calling out McDavid, and now, like, the fun in the game, this is going to be tough. You're in a tough spot. Yeah.
Well, to be honest, it, like, retroactively makes whoever hired him last look terrible.
Oh, yeah.
These takes were still there. He was still handling players this way.
Didn't have the platform to have it aggregated on Twitter.
It's just the lowest hanging fruit, too, of wrong takes. Like, if you didn't score a couple of points off Tortorella, like, have you been on Twitter?
Yeah. it's not great.
So Leafs only had one game this weekend. It was kind of, I missed them, you know? I missed the Sunday night game that we've been having the last couple of weeks.
You missed it as we were watching Grey Cup and NFL games?
No,
like,
that was sarcasm. I did not miss it. I could just float right into bed after that Grey Cup final. But yeah, they win on a lucky bounce. Wasn't really the greatest appearance of the team, especially by the back end. So let's just start with Justin Hall. Let's just get the bad stuff out of the way. What is the game? Like, what's next? I don't even know what can happen.
What is the
like,
game plan?
Help.
So I'm a little lost myself. Yeah. Here, I do have a loose theory like everyone else. But, you know, basically I think Justin Hall is probably a guy who was an NHLer. But, like, barely. You know, like, if you just kind of given him 100 cracks with the same talent level, you know, he probably makes the NHL more than half the time. He's an NHL guy. But everything went right for him in this Toronto Maple Leafs organization. Like, you know, Dubas and Keith believed in him. His confidence peaked, like, at the time that Jake Muzzin was at his best, and he got a chance with him. And, like, everything just worked out for everyone to believe that this guy was, like, a top four NHL D-man. And, like, that was the absolute ceiling, maybe. And I feel like now that everything is maybe less than 100% perfect, it's kind of becoming clear that he's a pretty good player. He's probably a third pair D-man that should play 15 minutes and defend. But I don't know about this top four thing, man. Like, he looks out of shape or something, and I don't think that's true. So I think it's more likely to just be talent. It's baffling, but it's a real concern for this Leafs team. The D-core looks terrible lately.
Dude, yeah, it was my number one concern over the stretch that we have talked about. I was like, you shouldn't look this way because you lose Rasmus Sandin. him playing 20 minutes is absurd, but it also is the worst sign for a player when it feels like he's never coming off the ice and it's not because they're dominating. It's like, boy, he's out there. Yeah, exactly. Like, more Hall. And I don't know, like, you're the film breakdown guy. So what I would actually like to see is how many times he just looks like he's stuck between a play where he's indecisive. It's either with an exit or whether trying to defend, that he's sort of just flat-footed and lost, that there's no decisiveness to what he's doing anymore, that his confidence is shaken, that he knows it. And part of it has to be that Muzzin has regressed too, and that now knowing that you don't have that ultimate security blanket next to you where you can make those mistakes and someone's going to cover up for them, and that if that happens, you both get exposed. It's got to be a part of this, but I actually look at him right now and go, oof. 20 minutes a night is actually unacceptable. Like, you cannot end up...
Who do you put out there? That's Rubens?
I know.
Liljegren?
But you know what? I think Rubens has actually looked okay. And Liljegren has had at least moments where I would go, hey, it's more... He makes mistakes too, but at least I can understand, all right, let him sort of make his way through this. Let him learn from playing. I don't know what you're learning from Justin Hall anymore. Like, you, the assessment that you have, I think should be the league-wide assessment, is this guy's a third pairing defenseman and he's not working well on this team and it's actually too much for him.
It's fascinating case study in confidence. Like, do you believe that this fall off could truly just be a confidence thing? Because that, to me, when you say he's a guy who looks caught between plays, that's confidence, right? Yeah. Like, when you're hesitant, when you're not just seeing and reacting, that's certainly related to that. The other thing I see is that, like, he's a smart player. He knows where to be and what he's supposed to be doing a lot of the times. And I often see him in a place where I'm like, he's where he's supposed to be, but he can't get the job done. Like, particularly in front of the net. Often I see him, like, standing beside a guy, covering a guy he should be covering, who gets an extra whack at the puck or digs out a loose rebound, or, you know, it's just like, tie him up, clear him out. Like, you're not just supposed to be at an area of the ice. Once you're there, you're supposed to do the hockey thing. Like, he's back on retrievals. But okay, now make a play with it. Like, I see him in a lot of the right areas, maybe it's related to what you're talking about, just a lack of execution or hesitation, but that, like, that extra thing that he's had in the past does seem lacking.
So we've seen... go ahead.
No, Katie. No, no. I just want to say, like, and it's unfortunate for him because normally on a team, $2 million third-pairing defenseman is not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
No.
But he's up a spot that's too high now. Mm-hmm. And also, if you are this team that is so capped out when they are healthy, right... you can't be paying a third pairing defenseman who is mistake prone an extra $1 million, which is what they're doing here. Like, it actually is an outsized problem for what he actually represents the team, which makes it even worse.
Yeah. And but, when, oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm just cutting everybody off today. I just look at, like, the defensive units we've seen over the last little stretch. Like, obviously this is where our attention draws because we've seen too much of Hall. So are any of the young guys or the new faces that you're seeing actually something we should be looking forward to that have impressed or have any promise to, like, maybe have more of an impact in the lineup?
You know, I honestly don't think so. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think Rubens actually has some upside. You know, in talking to people with the Marlies, it's like, name a thing and he can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, he can skate. He's big enough. He can shoot it. Like, he can do all the things. He can even think it. It's just, like, putting it together for him right now. It's, you know, part of me is like, is that maybe the next Justin Hall for them? Like, if they stick with this guy long enough, is he someone who can kind of defend and be the rangy guy on the third pair, second pair? Maybe down the road, but I don't think it's this year. You know, the other guys they have on the backside are, I guess, more offensively, you know, talented. Like, I know Kyle Dubas likes to try to develop guys that have some skill with the puck and can skate, and he kind of figures you can get the bigger, stronger guys, you know, anywhere on waivers or in a trade or something. So, now, I don't really see any easy fixes here. You know, I am of the belief now, in talking with you know, Kiprios on our show a little bit, that something has to happen. Like, even when Sandin's back, which, by the way, huge compliment to him that things fall apart when he's out. But, like, even when Sandin's back, it feels like you need a top four guy again, you know, which Dubas went and gotten Muzzin, and then he went and gotten Brody, and it feels like they're back there needing yet another top four guy. So is that Sherrod? Is that Giordano? Are you trading a first-round pick? There's lots of big decisions ahead.
And Rubens was just sent down. So, I mean, he was having some positive moments with the Leafs, and now he's been sent back down to the Marlies. Is there anything in that, just maybe more conditioning, more practice, or is that the last we'll see of him?
No, I think it's like, you know, Keith made some comments that he looked overwhelmed at times. And I think that's fair, right?
Like, your first exposure. Yeah, it's a lot on his plate.
Yeah, a Latvian kid been playing in the East Coast League in St. John's and all of a sudden works his way up here. It's a sizable ask to step into the NHL and not show some signs of, like, oh my goodness. And he had his moments where it looked like he was not quite NHL prepared. So, I think the way they would view that is good exposure for him to get a taste of the speed and what he'll have to deal with ahead of him. And that'll hopefully send him back and ideally dominate some AHL players and show that he's ready to come back and look better the next time around.
So Dahlstrom's up as part of that move. Would you think that Dahlstrom's drawing in or Biega, who's been in the press box the last few, gets a crack here?
Yeah.
Oh, it's depressing.
Yeah,
isn't it?
No, you tell us about those two guys. Dahlstrom, yeah, I have been a big
Dahlstrom. Joey Duzak,
what is Dahlstrom's first name for $100?
Is it Carl?
It's probably Rasmus.
Yeah, like, Dahlstrom. Okay, that's a player name. Okay, we got that guy going tonight.
Carl.
Let's go.
I don't know what my guy Duzak has to do to get a call.
Oh, yes.
Point a game down there.
Duzak's a Long Island boy, so I'll give him some love too. That's the extent of my knowledge about him too.
But basically, Bourne, this highlights that. This solution probably is not internal. Rubens looked good for a couple minutes to where it was like, hey, maybe when they're healthy, that's the answer to sheltering Hall or putting him back in the press box. It just doesn't look like there's an internal answer here.
No, there's not. And the Leafs are at an interesting position where, standards are high and expectations are so high, right? This is still a pretty decent decor, and when they're healthy, you feel pretty good about the decor, but it's like not good enough. Mm-hmm. And this is not a year to be pretty good again. So I would say that this is something that has been looked at by the team and they're exploring because, we need a little something fixed up there.
So looking up to the forward group, Marner's obviously been out the last couple games, Spezza joining him as well. Are you more encouraged by the success of the power play without those guys or discouraged by how shaky the penalty kill has looked without Marner?
Yeah, I guess discouraged by the penalty kill thing. I don't think, I've been maybe the leader of the Marner's not great on the power play bandwagon, but I don't think he's actively hurting it. Mm. I don't see Andre Kasha out there doing anything that, is that much different or better than Mitch Marner. I think they're having a nice little hot run. A few pucks are going in. But on the defensive side of things, on the PK, I think he makes a huge difference. He's one of the first guys that goes over the boards and gets in lanes, and he's really smart positionally and obviously makes plays when he gets a touch on it. So, the PK side of things, I think he's essential there. Did you guys happen to hear the comments from Doug Armstrong about guys having playoff success and world championship success
and
the
towards,
Team Canada?
Yeah, Tom Wilson.
Yeah, it wasn't actually. This has all got skewed by Leaf Nation.
That
it was about Tom Wilson. I actually think it was about Andrew Mangiapane. He's trying to big him up in his world championship experience. But I had the thought today for the first time, like, Marner being hurt and all the players, I'm not 100% sure he's going to be on Team Canada. Mm. I'm pretty sure, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm.
Interesting.
Well, here's what I will say. Please let any NHL player be on Team Canada. Because,
right. At this point, you might not even be going.
Well, here's the thing. I love international hockey. I'm terrified about this stupid rule of you got to be, even if you if you test positive or whatever, it's like you're in there for God knows how long. You got to
live in Beijing.
You're now a full-time resident of Beijing.
It's scary.
It's like, and I hope that doesn't scare players away, but if I don't get Sid and McDavid playing together ever for Team Canada in their primes, that's going to go on my Mount Rushmore of things that make me sad for no reason as I just accidentally think about them in a sports way during the day. Like how we didn't get...
Guess what, pal? You're getting a four-far born fourth line instead.
No, that's it.
Let's go!
Sometimes I think about how we didn't get Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao in their primes, and I'm just like, how did that happen? How did we live in a world where this didn't happen? And that's,
sucks.
I know, it sucks the most.
At arranging fights.
Yeah, and it just, the fact that we never got that randomly sometimes, I'm like, yuck, that's so, so terrible. That we never got, a Kobe-LeBron final when there were some opportunities that got really, really close. And we almost had, it's like, that makes me sad. And that one is just, I don't even like to think about it. I don't want to entertain it. But it's interesting that you said that, though, because I did think the same thing. Where I went, how long is this injury going to be? And if you are the Leafs in an all-in season, do you want him over there? What kind of conversations are you guys having? I don't know. But then also he tried to train with Connor McDavid all offseason and was like, yeah, I also want to play with Connor McDavid. Yeah. And so,
yeah. Hey, listen, to be clear, when I said about the us being on the fourth line, that's about me, not you. I'm in terrible shape. The thing with all of the same concern you have, JD, for me is like, how did we not just arrange this here in Toronto and call it the Faux-lympics, or like do some sort of like event? Like, we can get the same players, the same jerseys, the same everything. Why did, you know, the risk of now the Beijing thing and the NHL issues with it, what could happen to the NHL? We should have just, would it have been the same if it wasn't technically the Olympics for you, just to see them together?
Canada Cup. Bring it back.
No, it is. It's sorry, but it's the Olympics. We tried to do that thing where there was Team North America and
no,
Team
we
Europe
did. That's not the same.
That thing sucked.
Like, that sucked.
That sucked so bad, and I tried so hard to buy into it.
I didn't.
And it sucked. And people were like,
I think
Team
I watched
North America is so sick. And I was like, this sucks so bad. Canada yeah. won. We beat Team Europe. All these guys playing for no country. It was so bad.
It's it's at the best of every country minus their best players under 24. It's so, like, yeah. What?
No, and insane. And the thing with it is there was tweaks needed to be made. They needed to get rid of those teams and blah, blah, blah. And someone made the point of, you know, this is what happens. You need to give the world championship a bunch of years. And once it's finally here for a long time, it becomes tradition just like anything else. Everything's a fake tournament until you establish it. And I go, yeah, but who has the time for that now? You know, there's too many things on TV. There's too many sports. I'm not giving world championship. We have it. It's Olympics. It's just give us the Olympics. We need the Olympics. We need pros there. We need Team Canada. It's our thing. I just need it. Okay. So go. Players, go. Because I've made this reference already, but I've ripped Canada basketball a billion times because their players are like, we got to go to France. I don't know. That seems hard before the pandemic. It's too early. I don't want to play that early. I want to work with my skills coach. And I've said the hockey players will go play on the moon. Like, they'll take astronaut training. And so I need to see that now. I need to see them do that. Like, prove
they're
to me that
push to the limits
yes,
on that.
This is it. Like, this is the moon test. And finally,
well,
we get
don't
it.
Have to quarantine on the moon. So moon's easier.
Don't care. Go.
Bezos, set it up. Send everyone up.
Yeah. You want to name Elon Musk Time Person of the Year? Get us Moon Olympics.
Yeah. That seems like a fair trade-off to me.
Yeah. Borny, I don't know. Now I'm like, this has been a roller coaster morning.
It has been.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a up and down, and God knows where we're going. Do you want to weigh in on F1, by the way? We're about to take a break and take in an actual former F1 driver. And I know that you followed the series. I think you're the one that got me into the series, actually.
Man, I love the series, but I haven't kept up. I turned it on like so many people like 10 minutes ago in that race last night or yesterday. And I was like, that was amazing. What just happened? Yeah. Ah, that was cool, I think. Is there a flag on the play? What are we doing?
Dude, that's the
that
best.
Was cool, I think, is the best snapshot of F1 yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, that was cool. And then everyone's like, no, it wasn't. You're like, okay, I got
so. Definitely not. Yeah. Bro, that was Michael Massey's the worst. Literally don't know what he does.
Yeah, Mike Massey. We all know. Now we all have like spicy Mike Massey taste.
Yeah, you can factually say this is the biggest injustice I've ever seen in F1.
Exactly. Yeah.
Never seen anything like this happen before.
It's also the smallest injustice I've ever seen.
That will always be a sports moment for me is him and Toto. And him going, it's auto racing, Toto.
We just went auto racing.
We just won motor racing. And him just being so mad. Great. Good drama. Stuff. Can't wait for the series. Justin Bourne, thanks as always, buddy. This was great.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Real Kipper and Bourne.
Also great.
Great, great show.
Yeah. And one more great thing.
What's
free
that?
Leaf tickets.
Oh, Leafs fans, listen up. We're giving away a pair of tickets to the Maple Leafs December 29th home game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. All you have to do is download today and tomorrow's episodes of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the different code words that will be placed in each podcast. Then text each code word to 590-590 for your chance to win. Each code word counts as one entry. The winner will be selected this Wednesday, December 15th. So if you want to see the Leafs play the Pittsburgh Penguins, a little Kasperi Kapanen action there. He'll probably get 4 goals. All you got to do is download today's episode and tomorrow's and listen for the sneaky little code word.
Said by me this
week. It's said by Blake this week because I wasn't there for the recordings. So you can still listen for me, but especially listen for Blake because he's the one giving them away.
Competing giveaways here with WWE on the 29th. Yeah,
all we want to do is just make people's holiday season
bright.
We just
want December 29th to be a terrific day for listeners of the Fan Morning Show. So make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcast. It doesn't affect the contest, but it affects your karma if you rate and review and all that good stuff.
Does.
Plug, just, you know, punch the algorithm, whatever that's taken in.
You know,
do it.
All we ask is that you follow or subscribe to the podcast and leave a review if you're on iTunes. Like, that's it. That's the only thing.
It's not that hard.
So, nothing. All this. 4 hours of work just grinding away, waking up 4 o'clock in the morning. Didn't get to watch Succession last night. All of us had to make that sacrifice for you. And all we ask is this tiny little morsel. That's it. All we ask. By the way, are you going wrestling, Blake?
On the 29th?
Yeah.
Oh, I sure am.
I want to go now.
I know. Yeah. I might come back and I might go to it.
So
we should all go. But yes. Blake probably already has some sort of secret ringside.
Well, if we go, Blake's
going to don't ruin it for me, guys.
I might have floor seats. I don't
what?
Know.
Oh, yeah.
What, is there extras?
I don't. Well, I don't have one ticket, but I'm waiting to see if not the brother that came in for the Raptors game, the other brother, he doesn't drive. Mm-hmm. So it's a weeknight, but he doesn't know if he's off that week yet
Send
for work.
Send him a plane.
So he's a huge wrestling fan. He would be the 1A choice to come with me.
And then who?
I don't know. According to our schedule, you guys are both gone.
Well,
no, I'll come back.
I hadn't even considered going with the two of you.
So, you bought these floor seats or you got them for free?
I'm not disclosing that.
Wow, you got them for free. What a big wheel.
I have never gotten nothing.
No,
I'm going to plead the fifth here.
All I have to say.
Blake's got a simp now.
All I have to say is if I was the one who came with you, I wouldn't immediately tell people around me that I was embarrassed to be with you and that, you know, it wasn't my highest choice to hang out with you. And
that
you know,
happened once. And I was just nervous. Yeah.
I'm just saying,
I'm just saying
I would not do that. Some people might do that or have a track record of doing that, you know, making you feel small and insignificant at pro sporting events. Not me. No. I put you over.
Just, you know, I was going to plead the fifth and now I want to do a yes, if it is to be said. So it be, so it is. I want to plead that instead, but we got to take a break. You guys can bribe me at the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk F1 with a former Formula One driver and current Sky Sports F1 analyst, Karun Chandhok. That'll be great. We'll talk Max and Lewis and all the drama. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. Hey, Leafs fans. We're giving you the chance to win tickets to the Maple Leafs Penguins game on December 29th. Today's code word is GOAL. Text GOAL to 590-590 for your shot to win. The Fan Morning Show. What's that 590 of the band? Blake Murphy, Caleb Porfar, JD Bunkus. Follow us on socials.
Yeah.
Just our names.
Do it. I just posted a nice picture of Vic.
Eating chips at 9 in the morning.
Story. Yeah, he's the one eating chips, not like a degenerate.
What a trash can.
At Fan590 and the Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Joining us now to help us sort through all of the F1 stuff from yesterday. We've had a lot of fun talking about it today, but now we have someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Former F1 driver and current Sky Sports F1 analyst, Karun Chandhok. Karun, good morning.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. How are you?
A bit tired. I won't lie. It's been a mentally exhausting 4 days in
Abu Dhabi. What happened?
Well, you know, there's a bit of camel racing in the desert, I think. Yeah, a few other bits and pieces going on.
So on our end, it's been a little exhausting too. Not because we had 4 days of coverage like you do, but yesterday the excitement of the race, and a lot of us here in Canada have come to, obviously there are long-term F1 fans here, but a good number of people have come to the sport through the Netflix documentary. And trying to understand on the fly exactly what was happening at the end of the race yesterday was a little confusing. So before we get into some of the specifics of the race and Max against Lewis, can you walk us through the controversy that there was at the end there and whether a day later it was the right call?
Yeah, sure. I mean, well, first of all, I have no idea how Netflix are going to make this any more dramatized. You know, it was Steven Spielberg couldn't write the script for this season, I think. Basically, Nicholas Latifi had a crash, which brought out the safety car. And nothing unusual in that, to be honest. You know, I think that was all sort of expected and par for the course. Lucky for Lewis, because he had built up a nice, comfortable lead and looked set for the world championship. But I think what happened after that was Max Verstappen came in and put on a new set of tires, or a fresh set of tires, I should say, and Lewis did not. So it then became clear that if Max had a chance to race against Lewis in the last couple of laps, he would overtake him because he had fresh tires and Lewis's tires were quite old and worn out. There was a situation where a bunch of cars who were one lap down were in between Max and Lewis. There were five cars in between them. Now, normally, when you're behind a safety car, they allow all of the lap cars to go past and rejoin the back of the queue. So effectively, the leaders line up in order one behind the other without any lap cars in between. But now, what was weird yesterday was the race director only asked the five cars between Max and Lewis to go past, and in fact, not the other three cars that were behind, which were Ricciardo, Stroll, and Schumacher. And Mercedes obviously are a bit upset about that because their view is, look, if you're going to let the lap cars pass, you have to let everybody pass. And the reason the race director didn't do that was if they had asked the other three cars to go past, we would not have had that last lap of racing. We would have finished the race under the safety car. So I think the race director felt, you know, he didn't want the world championship to end, I guess, behind the safety car. He wanted it to finish in racing conditions. So he made that decision. Obviously, Mercedes are not happy about that decision because it effectively gave Max the opportunity to attack Lewis and take the win and the title.
Yeah, and that's what's, I think, got to be so frustrating if you're a Mercedes fan, is just, hey, you get that safety car, it's basically walking you to a title, but it also felt like it was walking Max to a title. I know that they viewed it as, hey, we wanted to have racing at the end, but because of the tire situation that you just outlined, it seemed like it was an impossibility for Lewis to not be overtaken. And so it just didn't feel, I guess, to me as dramatic, knowing that he had such a clear-cut advantage in that spot and that you did kind of side with the guy who was losing the race and to give him a bigger advantage. Like, that one was a bit strange to me. And I wonder if you, is there any part of you that believes that, because a lot of fans of the sport are frustrated today, a lot of casuals like myself, like, we were all very excited by it finishing that way. It was historic. It was very interesting. But are there people around the sport like yourself who actually do believe that this was manufactured drama in some way and that this was an attempt against fairness, but more so for ratings and attention?
No, I don't think that's it. But I fully understand why, you know, casual fans may think that. I thought it was a messy situation. Personally, I think there were three different scenarios that could have been done there, right? But Latifi had the accident. They could have thrown a red flag to suspend the race, like we had in Saudi Arabia a week before. And then what happens in that situation is you have another standing start and basically they're both on fresh tires, and it's just a four-lap sprint to the flag, right? And that, I think, would have been the cleanest, fairest race to the finish because, that's a straight fight then. And it would have been an exciting finish as well, you know, four-lap sprint and new tires. I think that, to me, that would have been the best-case scenario or the fairest scenario, I guess. I think the race director, once he'd done the safety car, perhaps what he should have done is, you know, 30 seconds earlier, asked the lap car, no, maybe not 30 seconds earlier, but 15 seconds earlier, if he had asked all of the lap cars to go past, then it wouldn't have felt a situation where, you know, it's like you're sort of selecting five people, and it's just, that's just part of the rules. And it's then if you look at it and go, well, listen, it's just bad luck for Lewis that Latifi crashed at that point, right? And that's just luck. In the same way that in 2008, for his first world championship, he got lucky because it rained towards the end of the race. He won the title and Felipe Massa doesn't, right? That's sport. But I think what people are understandably confused and a bit upset about is the fact that we have this sort of messy end, right, where you sort of selectively ask some cars to go past and not the others. And I think that's where all this uproar is coming from.
So the best thing about being a new fan myself is what we've seen with the Netflix series and kind of getting an insight on this rivalry between Max and Lewis. And what's it like covering that in real life? And what is the tension or what is the rivalry like? Obviously, we kind of see one insight. We do see that they respect each other at times, and at other times it's quite heated. Yeah. So what's your perspective on being there and seeing it up close and personal?
I think it is kind of like that. I mean, first of all, Max is an extraordinarily straightforward guy. He is, what you see is what you get with him. He is the most straightforward racing driver I've come across, to be honest. Mm-hmm. There's no games. There's no gamesmanship. He just says what he thinks. And it's quite refreshing, to be honest, in this in this politically correct world that we live. You know, Lewis, there's a big difference between them. Lewis has been racing, whether in go-karts or cars, for 28 years. Max was 23 at the start of the season. He turned 24 in the middle of the year. I mean, he's been around less than Lewis has been racing. And so they're very different characters, very different personalities. I think their two team bosses were quite emotionally invested in this year's battle.
Yeah.
So it got quite heated between Toto and Christian, much more than Lewis and Max, to be honest. I think Toto and Christian were really getting wound up and sort of winding the teams up much more than Lewis and Max were. I think Lewis and Max were incredibly professional sportsmen who were fighting for the biggest prize in their sport. And, you know, Lewis, I tell you, the way Lewis handled himself after the race, you know, immediately after getting out of the car, was so dignified and so magnanimous. And it's an example, really, I think, to anyone in sport to how to take disappointment, how to take defeat. Obviously, he's upset that he's lost it, but he was incredibly magnanimous, I thought, after the race.
Yeah. I want to see that series now for how he acts, not in front of a camera, you know, not when they're putting it in his face, but in the behind the scenes where it's him and Toto. But you're right. It's funny because as we were talking about this, I'm so invested in this, you know, Max versus Lewis rivalry. I think we all are. But at the end of it, I kind of realized that same thing you did, where the animosity mostly does come from the team principals and how much they seem to loathe one another and how, like, they're both complaining. They're both so they seem impossible to deal with. And you get that shot of Toto that you guys had on the broadcast of when they lose and he walks out in front of his whole team and no one says a word to him and he doesn't say a word to anyone. And I'm like, that's as mad as I've ever seen a human being. Like, that's as mad as I've ever seen anyone. And part of Horner, when he's talking to the broadcast and he's celebrating this, feels so much of it is, yes, is he happy for his team? Yes, is he happy for his driver? Is he happy for Red Bull? Is he happy for himself? But to beat Toto seems like such a huge part of this. And I do wonder if, like, those two guys, that it actually is the bigger rivalry here. Like, if that is the thing that we're, like, most looking forward to seeing how this plays out between the two of them. Because when you talk about being straightforward and being honest, that's one of my favorite things about watching F1 is in the broadcast, you get Horner on after the first pass, and he is pissed off, and you're challenging him, and he's answering it pretty directly. I love the way that these two guys interact with the coverage, with each other, in the sport. I think it really does an excellent job of really adding to the stakes in this sport.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, they certainly seem to be much more wound up about it. I think both, you know, Max and Lewis were very calm, actually. You know, over the Abu Dhabi weekend, they seemed very relaxed in many, many ways, much more relaxed than everyone around them. I think, you know, obviously Lewis, this was his 9th time in a championship battle. Well, sorry, 10th time in a championship battle, I guess. So he's, you know, he's dealt with that pressure on several occasions before. So you expect him to be calm. Max is unbelievable. As a young man coping with that sort of pressure, he reminds me of Marc Marquez in MotoGP, you know, another person similar age. And they just soak up this pressure like no one else I've ever seen. I mean, I go back to Zandvoort, right? This is the Dutch Grand Prix. The race is basically designed for Max. The grandstands, I've never been to a race where 99% of the crowd were cheering for one person. I mean, the royal family were queuing up to shake his hand while he was chatting away with his buddies. It was insane. The whole weekend, newspapers, cover to cover, were on both Max. But, I, you know, there are a couple of occasions where I happened to end up walking to the pits alongside him, and we were chatting away, and honestly, we could have been at the Chinese Grand Prix. It just, the pressure just rolled off his back, and he you know, it was so impressive, you know, for a 23-year-old, as you were at the time, so, so impressive. And this is it, right? All the controversy that happened in the last 10 minutes of yesterday's race, at the end of the day, both drivers were deserving world champions. I think you can make a good case for both of them to be the more deserving world champion. You know, you look at Max, he broke the record in terms of podiums this year. He finished first or second in 18 out of the 22 races. Basically, every time he finished, he was first or second. The other four, he was two crashes, Silverstone, Monza, got taken out by Bottas in Budapest, and the tyre blew in Baku. Otherwise, he was first or second every time. That is a remarkable season when you think about it.
When you look at yesterday's race in general, do you think that the best driver won this year? And where do you place Max so far? I know it's early on, like, the greatest all-time list. Is he going to make that? Is he on his way up there? Or is this just so far-fetched because he's such a young kid so far?
Well, you've called me while I'm in the middle of writing my column about my top 10 drivers of the year.
Oh.
I have put Max as my number one. I just think the way he coped with the pressure of the season. And I know Red Bull started the season with a slightly better car, but actually in the last four races, they had a slower car. I think Mercedes had the better car, really, since Brazil. And the only mistake I can really think of for Max was that qualifying lap in Saudi Arabia. And apart from that, you know, he was brilliant. So I do think he was the better driver, but not by much, you know, mm-hmm. by the smallest of margin. Where does he rank at the all-time greats? It's too early to tell in terms of you know, what happens from here. But what I will say is he is unquestionably a once-in-a-generation talent who's arrived into Formula One. I said it from when he arrived back in 2015. You know, I think every few years, if you look at the history of F1, we've seen someone special arrive. We had Lewis before this. You had Fernando before that. Schumacher, Senna, Prost, Lauda. You know, every 5 to 7 years, somebody special comes along in F1 who is just something. There's an extra sparkle about them. And Max, from the moment he walked into the Formula One paddock, had this magic around him. So, I think, you know, he's a very deserving world champion.
So turning the page to next year, a little early here, but with everything you just said about Max, that's a lot of, obviously he's delivered now, he's the world champion, but that is a lot of pressure to deliver on those expectations. Do you think as we head into next season, there's more pressure on Max to repeat and show that this wasn't a one-year thing, or on Lewis to show that, hey, that wasn't a passing of the torch, I'm still at the top of this as well?
I think there's pressure on both. There's the impression on both of them, you know, all the time. I think that's the point of elite sports such as Formula One. You know, it's not a finishing school, right? You know, this is a place where you're fighting the best of the best. There's pressure on all 20 of those drivers, frankly. But there's also, I think, there's bigger pressure on their teams for next year because we have a huge regulation change coming where the cars are, you know, there's quite a different design philosophy to them. So there's a great deal of pressure on the teams to deliver a good car to allow these guys to fight for the championship.
Awesome. Well, great season, great final race, great having you on. Karun Chandok, thank you so much.
Pleasure, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. And look forward to his top 10 drivers ranking once that article comes out. Although he spoiled it for us already. Max number one.
Again, this is what I find so fascinating.
I have a guess at who's number two.
No, but everybody says that Lewis has the better car now. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like that was apparent. And Max was the one, again, who said it over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Although the fact that in Karun's estimation, that was only the last couple races.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Because I'm a latecomer to this and mm-hmm. very, very casual. But that is, I didn't realize that there had been that mid-season shift.
No, early in the year, the discussion was that Red Bull had made a better car. But yes, Mercedes obviously made some adjustments, and yeah, the car was better down the stretch. But that's just astounding when he puts it out that way about finishing first or second, barring disaster, and just how consistent he was. And like, that's why at the end of this, I would say, okay, I understand the controversy, and it does seem strange that they didn't just, you know, let both guys change the tires and let them really build
what
up
he
the drama.
Said, yes. Everyone starts again, like at that, and races to the end on level playing field. That would have been great.
I think the difficulty is there. They, I don't know. I'm just trying to think about why they wouldn't do that. And it's that you don't want to lose momentum. You don't want to lose your viewership. You don't want to have this thing slow down and have that seem like, okay, we're doing, just let him go. But again, it's tough when you look at it and go, hey, they basically handed this guy a really advantageous position when he was already losing a race. However, I would just say, on balance, Max was better this year. And the best guy won. And I don't come away from this feeling like I was in some way robbed of the true outcome here, which is that Max was the best driver this year. He was the best driver, and he was awarded as that. And I look at it and go, it came out correct in the wash. And it sort of takes away a little bit of the, feeling of unfairness to me, even though it did obviously feel unfair for anybody that was paying attention.
I'm already looking at the F1 2022 schedule when they come to Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
June 19th.
I know. Can't wait.
I definitely want to make an effort to go. That'll be my first time, obviously, ever seeing it. But
so that'd be what, June 20th? I'm doing a solo show?
Yeah.
Pencil it in now?
Well, I'm already taking that week off to a boss is listening. I'm just going to go to Montreal for maybe the month.
Well, if we would have had a little bit more time with Corona, I would have asked him about just like the coverage in general. Because it's funny because he's like, oh, he's so straightforward. It's so refreshing. I'm like, do you know what covering other sports is like, sir? Do you watch other sports? Do you even have an idea of what us, like, we're dealing with out here? Unreal. Like, that's your thought? He's the only one in your sport that's transparent and straightforward? Wow. Must be nice. Okay. Must be nice. Anyway, I think that was great. I can't wait for the, you know, true crime part of the Netflix series when Toto murders Latifi and we have to go through like the investigation and the trial of what he did with his body searching for Latifi. That's like the next season of Drive to Survive. Literally, it's like, oh, did you not know that you were driving to survive? It's like, okay, it's over for you, buddy. It's done. At least Canada's involved in this in some weird way. Montreal kid, you cost Lewis Hamilton a championship. I'm sure he's cool with it.
We got a lot of texts on the text line. People are just pumped that we were talking about F1 today and that. Especially with our guests and just very excited. And if you missed any of it, go back and listen to the podcast. We talked about it a bit at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. And then obviously our interview with Karun will be up and you can listen to that on the podcast version. But yeah, big F1 team here in the room.
Yeah, we love F1. And again, I think that it does speak to how sports need to be covered moving forward.
Yeah.
That unless you're the NFL where you have gambling and just the one day where everyone sits around and is just invested in your product, you've got to find more creative ways to enhance the viewership experience. And if you're hockey or an 82-game season and you've got a lot of players that are very from the outside, the way they're covered, right? Like, what do you know about any hockey players? Honest to God. Like, even when they do
all
these personality things,
yeah,
it's like it's nothing of actual consequence.
Speaking of hockey, we have a little breaking news. The Flames games are postponed through December 16th at least. The Leafs are there this week, of course.
Well, that's awkward.
Yeah. So
due to a COVID outbreak.
Yeah. The Leafs are supposed to be there on the 16th. So it sounds like
maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. Well, through December 16th would mean they're not playing December 16th.
Yeah, not maybe not.
But I guess it would be a question of can they bump it to the December 17th or is that a makeup later? The Leafs are already on a pretty condensed. They already play the 18th and the 19th, so I can't imagine the 17th being a possibility, but there you go. Sorry to hijack that, but I thought that was relevant to Leaf listeners.
Yeah.
We'll accept it.
Sure, I don't know what to say off it.
Yeah, it's like not sure changes that West Coast trip. Yeah,
well, they will be playing tomorrow, hopefully, against the Oilers at 9 p.m.
Yes.
But tonight.
Any final thoughts on Raptors or that Monday Night Football game? I know we teed it up a little earlier, but
I'm happy to see the Raptors back in action. Feel like it's been days.
Yeah.
I just, when they play teams like the Kings, I just don't really care.
It's kind of a no-win situation for you. Like, if they beat them, of course, you were supposed to beat them. Yeah. And if they lose, it's just like, oh, yeah, they're doing the...
It's just like, it's the Sacramento Kings. They're moribund, and they're embarrassing, and they just, there's nothing of interest from that team. Like, I'm not interested in them whatsoever. And the one thing I probably would have been interested in is like how Rashawn Holmes looked because he's one of those, oh, the Raptors wanted him. Maybe he becomes a trade target, guys, and you don't even get to watch him play against this team.
Did the Raptors want him or did I just like will that into being
that
a conversation.
Is that you?
Of course it was me. Oh, and okay. It was Harry Giles the year before that. And it's just one guy every year. Sometimes I get the guy. It was Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Yeah, Harry Giles, though, you probably don't want to take a victory
Harry
on that
Styles.
One.
No, Harry Giles, I the whole idea stinks. Was, hey, what about if he could get a couple months with 905?
Yeah. What I think? Nothing would have changed.
Any updates on OG? Like, is he on his way back? Or
nothing. We got nothing on OG, nothing on Kem. Precious Achiuwa's in COVID protocol.
Are we going to see some Bing Bonga tonight?
I mean, maybe. They only have 11 healthy players. Hey-o. So
Chris Boucher's been getting lots of time. Mm-hmm. Who else is going to play?
Yeah. Again, this is a really low on the, if we were doing the interest index, like with Raptors tonight. It's a hearty one. I just don't know what you're supposed to take away from these performances outside of things like, you know, how Scottie Barnes plays. Like, if Siakam lights up the Sacramento Kings, I look forward to Raptors Twitter being like, see, maybe he's not bad after, you know, like, that's basically the night.
It's almost like we shouldn't have a referendum on who a player is after every single game.
Every single game, yeah.
Good or bad.
Especially one that's as up and down as that guy. So, yeah, I'm not really that interested in it. My primary focus is absolutely on the football game because I think it's massive. It's really huge stakes. Like, the Rams win this game, and we're back to talking about them as Super Bowl contenders. They lose. I do think that we're going to start to, like, speaking of referendums, discuss them as the, like, why do we talk about them as though they're a competitive team?
I will say you can juggle both because it's the perfect timing tonight where the Raptors-Kings have the early tip at 7.
I'm watching both.
And then 8:15 scheduled tip for Monday night, so really like 8:30, and then the halftime should line up and everything should work out nicely for that. Raptors could be sitting in a playoff spot this time tomorrow.
Ooh, I like that.
Which one?
The play-in. Yeah. But the East is a mess. But
no, I know. But I'm like, which one is there?
Yeah, yeah. It's
it's fine.
I don't want to do 2.5 months of this show with no Raptors games. So
do it for Blake.
Yeah, it's all about me.
Yeah,
it's all about you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah,
yeah. This was fun today.
Yeah, it's
there's so many things,
so many different
chaos.
Sports.
Yeah,
so
tonight's
many
gonna
fun
feel
things.
Boring with only two games.
I know. And like, no, like. Extra sports like F1, UFC.
No
Great
extra
Cup.
Sports.
Like, you know, the ones that are on the fringe that you get to be excited for.
Monday Night Raw on Sportsnet.
Oh, yeah. I got to tune into that, actually.
The tag team, whatever I said earlier when I had it in front of me.
Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. Follow us on our socials. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.